We're going to begin our study this morning by looking at two passages that seem to be contradictory. We'll look, first of all, at Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and look at verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. Now, if you go to Luke chapter 12, in Luke chapter 12, in verse 19, this is exactly what a man said. Ecclesiastes 2 says it's good for a man to tell himself, eat and drink. This man told himself. He said, soul, you have many goods. This is verse 19. You have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But this time in Luke, we find that Jesus told this audience that God said to him, you fool. You fool. Over here in Ecclesiastes 2, the writer said, this attitude toward life is from the hand of God. Over here, we have Jesus saying God calls a man a fool for saying, eat, drink, and be merry. Whether we understand what the phrase means or not, one thing is very clear. It's kind of a side point, but it's a valuable one. You can't take a word or a phrase in your Bible and assume it means the same thing everywhere you find it. You have to look at the context. The Bible is not contradictory, and there's a valid explanation why. Over in Ecclesiastes 2, he says, this is a good way to view life, eat, drink, and be merry. But in Luke 12, he said, this is a terrible way to view life, eat, drink, and be merry. And so that sets the stage and prepares us for a study of the view of life that we find revealed in scriptures that we ought to have. In Luke chapter 12, let's begin with that one. You see in verse 19 that this man said, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. The man was pretty certain that he would be living tomorrow and next week and next month and next year and in years to come. He lived as if tomorrow is certain. And so he said, eat, drink, and be merry. Many live that way today. Life is completely devoted to things. This man said, I'll tear down my barns and build larger ones. I'm going to prepare for life because there's tomorrow and next week and next month and a few years to come. You know how we would put it? I want to be ready for retirement. I want to be ready down the road. So I'm going to spend my life amassing, taking care of, acquiring, preserving the things that I have. If you look back up in verse 15, Jesus said, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions or things. So here's a view of life. Got a lot of young men and women in our audience, in the prime of life. It's easy for you to not view the possibility that there's no tomorrow. It's easy to get caught up with, I got to prepare for my family a year from now, 5 years from now, 15 years from now. I'm 35. Maybe if God's willing, I'll be able to retire in 30 years or 25 or 20 years. So I've got to be concerned about, you don't have barns and crops, but it may be your 401 or your retirement or whatever it is you do to prepare for tomorrow. And Jesus said that God said to this man, this is a pretty foolish way to live. Why? Well, one of the things that's pointed out in the text is in verse 20, where the man is saying, you know, I've got all these years ahead of me. Verse 20, God said to him, you fool, this very night your soul is required of you. Now who will own what you have prepared? I do not know anything about the family that was recently killed on Highway 105. That was just in the past about week. All I know is what I read in the paper. It was a family that had been to church. I guess it may be on a Sunday. They were coming home. They never made it home. Man and a wife, I think, and two children. So here we are thinking about tomorrow, next week, next year, retirement. You may not make it home. Hope that doesn't happen. But Jesus said it's foolish to live as if tomorrow is certain. You don't know about tomorrow. And that's a blind view of life. There's another reason in the text here in Luke chapter 12 that we see that this view of life robs us, actually, of the enjoyments that God has provided us. Note what this man is doing. If you're familiar with this story that Jesus tells, this parable he tells about this man, you'll note that this man is doing things. There's nothing wrong with what he's doing in and of themselves. I mean, he's tearing down barns, he said. Verse 18, I'm going to build larger barns. He's got a crop that's just bursting at the seams. He's got to do something with it. And so his life is about, I've got to take care of what I've got. And I've got more coming. I've got to do something with that. There's nothing, I don't know, maybe the man didn't have a family. I don't know. There's nothing about a wife. There's nothing about children. There's nothing about neighbors. There's nothing about fellow believers. Nothing. I don't know about that. The Lord didn't tell us. But what I do know from the story is that this man's life had a focus. And it was consumed with things. If you were here last Sunday morning for our Bible class, we talked about Mary and Martha. Martha was a good woman. But she let things become her focus. Mary didn't. They're better people, evidently, than this man. But this man is consumed with things. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Go back to the book of Ecclesiastes. This time we're going to go to chapter 9. Look at verse 3. This is an evil that is done under the sun. And by evil, he's not talking about moral evil. This is a bad thing that the writer observes. And what is it? That there's one fate for all men. What is that fate? Look at the end of the verse. They all go to the dead. The good man, the bad man, the good planner, the bad planner, the man with a family, the man that doesn't have a family. Isn't that sad? You say, he's got a family. He ought to be able to live a long time. He's trying to live somewhat of a right life. Doesn't make any difference. All go to the dead. And you don't know when it will be. In verse 5, he said, furthermore, the dead do not know anything. No longer do they have a reward. He's not talking about heaven. This book's not talking about heaven, Ecclesiastes. He's saying, as far as their earthly concerns are, as far as that consideration, they have no more investment in earth. There's no more reward on earth. There's no more savings. There's no more enjoyment of life's blessings. That's all gone. He said, verse 6, their love, their hate, their zeal have perished. And they no longer have a share in all that is done under the sun. That is, on this earth, in this life. Look at the counsel in verse 7. Go then, eat your bread in happiness and drink your wine with a cheerful heart. That's very similar to that verse we began with in chapter 2, and it's an admonition throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. Eat your bread in happiness and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. In other words, whatever God has decided in His grace to provide you to enjoy, enjoy it. Is it youth and age and ability to be entertained by sports and activities? Is it those kids that I see that many of you have? Is that it? Whatever it may be, enjoy it, he said. Look, he said, let your clothes be white all the time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. He's not talking about changing the oil in your car. He's talking about the idea of enjoying life. That's the idea. Look at the next verse. Enjoy life with the woman you love all the days of your fleeting life which you have under the sun. For this is your reward in life and in your toiling which you've labored under the sun. God looked down upon this earth at the very beginning, and there was the man, perfectly created, but there was a problem. God said it's not good for the man to be alone. So God in His wisdom and love and power took a rib from the man after He put him to sleep and built a woman, said, brought her to the man. So here's the relationship of marriage. Somebody can spend his life with, love with, serve God with, enjoy life with. Go through the valleys with, climb the mountains with. But you know what happens, don't you? I've got my barns I've got to tear down. I've got to build bigger ones. I've got my savings. I've got my house, I've got my yard, I've got my cars. I've got these other extracurricular activities, and you know what happens? I don't have time for the wife that God gave me, just to enjoy life with her. To spend an evening talking, strolling together, whatever you like to do. Going somewhere with her, whatever it may be. This text says, enjoy your wife. Look, it's not going to be long till she's getting older. Every day she's getting older. Those young children there on your lap that are sitting on the pews with you, it won't be long. They'll be dating. They'll be getting married. They'll be gone. He's saying, enjoy life. Life should not be about building bigger barns and tearing them down and having more crops, about things, as if I got to prepare for tomorrow because, man, I've got, when I get older and I got these years ahead of me, I want to be ready for those. What about today? And enjoying the blessings God has given today. And so, this view of life, if I understand the text as well as the book of Ecclesiastes, is really it's a short-sighted view, and it's not healthy. In the text of Luke 12, there's even something greater that this view of life robs us of. In Luke chapter 12, again, in verse 21, he said in verse 20, you know, this man's going to die tonight. All this stuff that he prepared is gone. You know, if you die, you don't take your 401k with you. There's no use taking your ATM card because you're not taking it to heaven with you. It's all gone. But verse 21, so is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Verse 23, he said, life is more than food. You can't get more basic than that. You got to eat. I'm telling you, there's more to life than eating. There's more to life than food. There's more to life than and to the body than what you put on, than clothing, he said in verse 23. In verse 32, he said, the Father's chosen to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to charity. Make yourselves money belts which do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near nor moth destroys, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. I'm telling you, folks, we live in America. It's a prosperous society. You drive fine automobiles. You got air-conditioned homes. You're wearing good clothes. Many of you do have savings accounts and checking accounts, and we're all doing it. And that's not wrong, but the view of life that focuses on things accumulating things, acquiring things, is going to rob you of the greatest treasure of all, and that's the treasure of the rule of Christ in your heart and your life. And not only yours. You men who in this audience, you ought to be the spiritual leaders of your family. And if your life is concerned with things, what's that going to do? Maybe not your wife. Well, maybe she won't be affected. But what about your children as they observe Dad? What's his focus in life? And so here's a view of life. Eat, drink, and be merry. I've got many years. Got to be concerned about things. A poor view of life. There's nothing wrong with having material things. But when our life is devoted to it, that's materialism. And that is a problem. Look at 1 Corinthians 15:32. Here's another view of life. Very dangerous. You'll see this fellow's different. Where the fellow we read about in Luke 12 said, eat and drink because, man, I've got all these years and I've got to get ready for them. This fellow's a little different. Look at verse 32. There's your eat and drink phrase. Let us eat and drink. What's the difference for this guy? For tomorrow we die. He acts like there is no tomorrow. It's just today. So you know what? What he's dealing with here in the text, he said, verse 34, become sober-minded as you ought and stop sinning, for some have no knowledge of God. And he said, I speak this to you shame. In the Corinthian society, it's whatever brings pleasure today. Everything else really not very high on the value scale. If it's sex, fine. If it's money, fine. Whatever it may be, power, because there's no tomorrow. It's today, I got to make the best out of it, get everything I can out of today at all costs, or at the sacrificing of all costs. This view makes pleasure and self-enjoyment, self-indulgence the chief focus of life and leaves no room for sacrifice for a higher cause. You see that right here in our text. You'll note in verse 32, if from human motives I fought with wild beasts at Ephesus, what does it profit me? Whatever Paul is referring to, he said, why did I go through that trouble? Why did I go through that sacrifice? If the dead are not raised, I should have just forgotten it and went with the flow. Eat and drink for tomorrow we die. There's nothing wrong with pleasure. Wholesome pleasure and having fun. But when our lives are devoted to the satisfaction of passion and desire and fun or whatever brings us joy, maybe it's not fun, maybe it's power, I don't know. That's hedonism. There's the materialistic guy, and here's the guy who's devoted to whatever brings him today's pleasure. It's so foolish. In verse 34, he said, stop sinning. I speak this to your shame. You know, when people's lives are devoted to whatever today makes them happy or satisfies their whims, they're setting themselves up for some real problems in the future. Maybe, maybe not, but it's certainly a possibility. You see this in Proverbs chapter 1. This woman is out in the marketplace trying to tell people, stop, I want to give you some wisdom, some counsel. Not worried about wisdom and counsel. I got to go to the store today. I've got things to do today. I've got appointments today. Their life is about today. Well, you get down to verse 30. He said, they would not accept my counsel. They spurned all my reproof. What's going to happen? 31. They shall eat the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own devices. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. In other words, somewhere down the future, they're going to wish they had listened, but it'll be too late. When the storm comes, they will not be ready because they were living just for today. So here's a person, unlike the guy in Luke 12 who says, boy, I got to live for tomorrow. I got to get ready for tomorrow. This guy says, I ain't worried about tomorrow, man. And I don't have time to develop my soul, to involve myself in practices that are not enjoyable today. I certainly don't have the time to deprive myself of things and expose myself to things that brings me unhappiness. Life's too short. Enjoy today. But you know, when you look back at our text in 1 Corinthians 15, this is a foolish way to live, because actually there is a tomorrow. You see, this guy here in verse that we read a while ago, he said, "What does it profit me if the dead are not raised?" But what he says back up in verse 20, Christ has been raised from the dead. There's no question about people being able to be raised from the dead. The tomb's empty. Christ was raised. But there's more. He's the first fruits. It's just the beginning. He's the first fruits of those who are asleep. "Since by man came death, by man came also a resurrection of the dead. As in Adam all die, so in Christ all will be made alive." There is, for those who serve God, a resurrection from the grave. Say, okay, that's good. I'm glad for Christians. If they want to sacrifice all these pleasures of life and give up materialistic pursuits because they're going to be raised from the dead someday, okay, but I'm going to enjoy life today, and I'll just go to the grave having got everything out of life I could get, and that'll be the end of it. No, it's not the end of it. There's a tomorrow for the wicked too. Look at John chapter 5. John chapter 5, verse 28, Jesus said, "Marvel not at this, for an hour is coming when in which all who are in the tombs will hear his voice and will come forth, those who did good deeds to a resurrection of life, those who committed the evil deeds to a resurrection of judgment." Uh-oh. "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die." Wait a minute. That's not the end of the story. Don't close the book yet. Don't pull the curtains yet. There's a resurrection, and it's going to be followed by judgment. Besides the fact of this view of life exposing us to the problems in this life, and certainly not prepared for eternity, look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 6, and you'll see that this way of living and thinking right now brings death. Not tomorrow, not when your heart quits beating. Right now. 1 Timothy 5, 6. "She who gives herself to wanton pleasure is dead even while she lives." In other words, dead to God. No fellowship with God. So this view of life is condemning and judging. Well, there's a third view. Since you're in Timothy, let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 4. Now, the first fellow we looked at got many years. Tomorrow's certain. Second fellow we looked at, he said, "Let's eat and drink. Tomorrow we die. There's no tomorrow. Live everything for today." But here's a third guy. 1 Timothy 4. "The Spirit explicitly says that in the latter times some will fall away from the faith, paying attention to deceitful spirits and doctrines of demons." Drop down to verse 3. "Men who forbid marriage." Marriage. God made marriage. God made it to be enjoyed. It's a temporary relationship. It's only for this earth. And here's some guys that come and say, forget about enjoying marriage. Forget about satisfying the natural desires of the body. You got to live for tomorrow. Live for tomorrow. Live for tomorrow. That's all this guy sees. It's the ascetic. It's the guy who denies the wholesome, God-given pleasures of life for the future. He said, "They forbid marriage. They command abstaining from foods which God is greatly, gratefully shared in, can be gratefully shared in by those who believe and knew the truth. For everything created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it is received with gratitude." God made marriage. God made foods. God made marriage for you and I to enjoy. He He made the man, he's lonely, he made the woman, and yet Jesus tells us there's no marriage in heaven. So what does he expect us to do? Exactly what we read in Ecclesiastes 9, enjoy life with the woman you love. And it's a mistake. I don't know that anybody in this audience subscribes to it, but there are people in the world that are denying life's pleasures to climb some spiritual ladder, something for the future. The Bible doesn't teach that. And when we go back to the text we began with in Ecclesiastes, you see that I don't know what kind of God these people serve. Some of these folks are the folks that are revered as holy, godly people. They shut themselves off in a building away from society. They don't marry. They don't enjoy foods. Boy, aren't they holy and godly? Well, I don't know what God they're serving, but it's not the one that's the author of this book. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verse 24, where we began our reading, he said, it's good for a man, nothing better than to eat and drink, than to enjoy the life, the labor that he has. And then he said, it's from the hand of God. This is what God gave you to enjoy that. That theme runs throughout this letter. Look at chapter 3, verse 12. He said, I know that there's nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Eat and drink in this book is not talking about literally taking a cup of something and putting it to your mouth, or food, putting it in your mouth. It's enjoying what God has given you. Look at chapter 5, verse 18. Here's what I've seen to be good and fitting, to eat and drink. What do you mean by eating and drinking? He explains. And enjoy himself in all one's labor, in which he toils under the sun, during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. So, you got a wife, a husband? Thank God. And enjoy them. You got children? Forget about the barns and crops and just building more and more for the future. Enjoy your life today. So, well, that's not godly. Yes, that's godly. To live only for tomorrow is contrary to what we read throughout the pages of God's book. Over in Colossians chapter 2, Paul in another letter dealt with this philosophy, and he said something about it. Verse 21, here's that same philosophy in other words. Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. That's not talking about alcohol or drugs. That's talking about this view of life that you don't enjoy life's pleasures. But he says, look at verse 22. He said, these are the teachings of men. And he said, verse 23, these are matters which have, to be sure, the appearance of wisdom. But he said, it's in self-made religion. It's not God's will. That's not the way to live. And so, look at 1 Timothy chapter 6. So we've looked at three views of life. One that just sure there are years to come and that's what you live for. One that says, no, there's no tomorrow, so they just fill themselves with whatever pleasures or power or whatever satisfies for the day. And then there's the other that says, I'm not going to enjoy today, I'm just going to live for tomorrow. Neither one is correct. 1 Timothy 6, verse 17. Instruct those who are rich in this present world. So it's not wrong to be rich, and that's not what that man in Luke 12 is condemned for. It's his attitude toward those things. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited and fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches. That is, this is my nest egg. This is my security blanket. This is, no, you don't. You may die tonight. And whenever you die, you're not taking any of those riches with you. But he said, look, put your hope on God. Unlike that woman we read about in 1 Timothy 6 that is dead. She lives, but she's dead. Here's a person who lives and lives. They're living and enjoying the riches God has given them, but they're also living in God. They have a hold on the heavenly treasures. And look at the rest of that verse. Who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. They're not only enjoying the heavenly treasures. You know what else they're enjoying? They're enjoying the earthly treasures. Is there tomorrow? This person says, well, there may be. So if God's blessed me with treasures, I'm going to try to live like there may be a tomorrow. But there may not be. And I'm going to be prepared for that too. But I'm going to enjoy today with my wife and my children and the possessions God has given me. Look at the difference in the view toward tomorrow with this man. His hope is in God. He knows that God's blessed him with riches. You drive this good car, enjoy that air-conditioned car. You got money to go on a vacation? Great. But you realize that life is certainly uncertain and there is an eternity coming. He warns about that right here in this text in verse 18. Instruct them to be good, to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share. So it's the attitude of not everything for self, sharing with others. And look at the next verse. Storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. They know that there's a spiritual future. They know that. But they're still enjoying the blessings of today. Look at the balance in this kind of reasoning compared to what we were looking at in these other texts. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 in verse 8. We live in a society that's just consumed about your body. Boy, you got to look good. You got to get that fat off. You got to be able to run 20 miles. You got to be able to... We're just consumed with health. And health is good. I'm not saying it's bad. But look what he said in verse 8. Bodily exercise only of little profit. But godliness is profitable for all things. It holds promise for the present life and also for that life to come. People will sacrifice their families to have good health, to exercise, to keep themselves fit. What about their family? What about their faith? Turn to 2 Corinthians 6:2. This will be our last passage. Here we are. We've studied these few verses. We've partaken of this memorial supper. We've sang these songs of praise. We've been given an opportunity today to think about God and our relationship to God. I don't know where you are in this audience today. I don't know if you're ready for the fact there may not be a tomorrow for you. I don't know if you're ready for the fact there will be a tomorrow for you, a tomorrow of resurrection. But I know what this verse says. As Paul writes to these Corinthians, working together with him, we also urge you not to receive the grace of God in vain. For he says, at an acceptable time I listened to you, and on the day of salvation I helped you. Behold, now is the acceptable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. God had planned this scheme of redemption, and it had been culminated in the coming of Christ. He sent out his apostles and prophets. Now is the time to be saved. Now is the time to do something about it. And today is the time. As we've heard the gospel, we know the gospel, we've given opportunity. Not tomorrow, not next week. Now is the day of salvation. If we can assist someone heeding that urgent message by confessing the name of Jesus and committing your life to his service, looking at a different focus on life, if we can help you do that, won't you come as together? We stand and sing.